Welcome to Downrange Radio and our exclusive coverage of the landmark Supreme Court decision on D.C. v. Heller. That the Second Amendment does indeed confer the individual right to keep and bear arms to the citizens of the United States. I'm your host on Downrange Radio, Michael Bain, also the host of Shooting Gallery on the Outdoor Channel. And what we've been trying to do today, the day after the landmark decision, is put it in some kind of perspective. Take a look at where we're going from here, because just as, and this is a quote, I believe, from Dave Kopel, who we'll be talking to a little bit later, but Rome, in fact, wasn't built in a day, and constitutional legislation isn't built in a day. What happened yesterday is a beginning rather than an ending. So with that in mind, I've gone to Alan Gottlieb, and I'm sure those of you who follow right to keep and bear arms issues, the name Alan Gottlieb is a very familiar one. He is the founder and head of the Second Amendment Foundation and has been a tireless worker for right to keep and bear arms issue. He's, of course, an attorney. And 15 minutes after the decision was posted yesterday, the Second Amendment Foundation joined with the Illinois State Rifle Association and filed suit against Chicago's draconian gun ban. They have also filed suit in San Francisco. Now, the San Francisco has an on-again, off-again ban. It was struck down by the state Supreme Court based on preemption issues. That is that no municipality in the state of California, as in many states, can pass more restrictive gun legislation than the state itself. So that's been going back and forth, but basically, San Francisco does have an ordinance that says that people in public housing, and you think these people might need protection, people in public housing cannot possess firearms. So the Second Amendment Foundation is going to be going after that law as well. So immediately after we have the Supreme Court decision, the Second Amendment Foundation, along with the National Rifle Association, have stepped up. They've started legislation, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk, to hear a little bit what Alan Gottlieb has to say about where we're going and what we need to be doing. Without any further ado, Alan Gottlieb with the Second Amendment Foundation. First, I know that you've been fighting this pretty much for as long as I have. It seems like most of our adult life. Could you just give me a sense of how you felt yesterday?
Well, it's sort of when you've worked that many years and you get a victory like that you've been fighting for so long, it's sort of like it feels great, but it's also numbing. But it's really rewarding when you sit back and really take a look at a reflection of all the work that went into that and all the years of preparation with law review articles and public culture articles and magazines and research and everything that was put in place to allow the decision to come forth, plus the legal maneuvering to get it to the Supreme Court. And boy, it's really a thrill.
I think that definitely sums it up well. One of the things that I've seen on the internet, and for better or for worse, that we all live on the internet, but that there have been Supreme Court decisions which basically they might have changed things, but they fell by the wayside because the attendant lower court litigation never happened. Tell me about the Second Amendment Foundation right now is moving very quickly to avoid that.
Well, in light of the Supreme Court decision, you know, that first of all, for everybody listening, it said that, one, it's an individual right, civil right to own firearms, and two, that the ban itself was unconstitutional and took the law out, which is the first time a federal court has actually taken out a law on guns. In light of that, it's time to, that's sort of the cornerstone now of our foundation. Now we have to build on the foundation, and so we didn't want to waste any time because it's important to get the right suits filed in the right places. And so the Second Amendment Foundation immediately filed suit challenging Chicago's handgun ban about 15 minutes after the decision came out. We were already in federal court in Illinois.
I think that's wonderful. I think that's wonderful. I know I've seen Mayor Daley from Chicago on numerous television shows, morning shows this morning, saying that he is prepared to go to the mattresses to guarantee that the people of Chicago, except for the criminals, stay unarmed. What do you think the chances are of this suit succeeding?
I think the chances are extremely good because we're dealing again with guns in people's own home. It's right on point to what the Supreme Court, the heart of the Supreme Court decision. And the importance of this suit for us is that D.C. is not a state, and so we need to make sure that the Second Amendment gets incorporated by the 14th Amendment to apply to the states as well. Justice Scalia, in his opinion, in a footnote, noted the fact that historically other rights, like the First Amendment, have now been incorporated by the 14th Amendment, and he would assume the Second Amendment would follow the same route, but you have to get it done. And so the main thing for the Chicago suit is not just knocking out their ban, but getting it incorporated so that every ban in the country bites the dust. Also, but just for information's sake, to get to the impasse of incorporation, we've also, as we're speaking right now, a suit is being filed in San Francisco. San Francisco denies people who live in public housing the right to own a firearm in their own home, and we're challenging that on the exact same grounds as the Chicago suit. So we're going through two different circuits to try to get incorporation tacked on as quickly as possible.
You know, Alan, that's really breathtaking. It's so wonderful to see us on the offensive like this.
Yeah, it's really great. The only problem, Michael, is everything had, you know, every cloud has a silver lining, and maybe every silver lining has a cloud. One of our problems is a lot of our gun rights activists and supporters think we won and they just go to sleep.
Right, right.
And this is really not the end of the battle. This is the beginning of the battle. And then going back, if you look at the abortion battle as an example, as a case study lesson, that issue really wasn't hot and alive until the Supreme Court ruled on the issue. Well, now that the Supreme Court ruled on the Second Amendment, what you're going to see is a lot of the anti-gun people inflamed and going crazy and trying to propose all kinds of crazy, you know, laws and schemes to regulate firearms so they think they can get around the decision. So my feeling is we're going to see actually more legislation aimed at gun owners, gun rights, than was happening before. And so the floodgates now are going to be open both in the legislative field plus in the legal challenge field. And so this issue is going to be hotter than ever.
You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, and again, I'm a layman. I live with an attorney, but I'm not sure that counts. None of it actually rubs off or anything. But
maybe that's a good thing.
It may be. But in looking at the decision, we talk about the concepts of trigger locks, safe storage issues. My reading of this is that there are a lot of municipalities, not a lot, but there are a number of municipalities who basically were using safe storage / trigger lock / disassembly as what amounts to a soft ban. And my reading of Justice Scalia's majority opinion is that those would no longer pass constitutional muster.
I think you're 100% right, and to be honest, I had a personal conversation philosophically with Justice Scalia about that particular issue, and he was very troubled by it because it was a backdoor ban by saying you can have a gun, but you have to have it unfunctionable, so you cannot use it. And in similar words, he referenced that he thought that was a soft ban as well. So if a ban doesn't pass muster, a soft ban doesn't either. I think that's definitely the case. Now, if you tell people, if it's the other way around, there's some laws that are written that if you lock up your gun and then you use it to defend yourself or somebody gets a hold of the gun and misuses it, it's an affirmative defense and you can't be prosecuted because you tried to store it safely. That would probably pass muster. But the cities and places that are proposing laws or have enacted laws that say, okay, you can have the gun, but you have to have it disassembled and locked up so you can't use it, that's not going to pass muster. I think you're right.
Another issue that I think we're all going to be looking at, depending on what happens in November, is that phrase "dangerous and unusual." What's your thinking on that? When Justice Scalia talks using the phraseology "dangerous but unusual" and "weapons in common use," what's your thinking on that?
Well, I knew that language was going to be there based on comments he made at oral arguments, and I knew if he wrote the opinion, that was going to be in there. And basically, it's vague and it's an art form, and I think it was done on purpose because he didn't want to alarm the public that we're going to overturn all these laws that we have on machine guns, particularly the federal ban, which the federal government was very concerned about. And the federal ban really isn't necessarily a ban. It's you have to have the guns, you know, registered and have a license to pay an excise tax for it. So I think maybe what we're looking at is saying that laws of that nature are okay, but an outright ban may not be okay. And it's vague in that area, and that's going to take an additional case as well to see what the court really means by that.
Well, I would suspect that should a so-called assault weapons ban materialize after the November elections, that might well be a case that would be litigated, and that phraseology might come up during the litigation.
I'm sure our opponents will use that out of that decision for sure. The question is that, you know, are assault weapons, as they're defined by legislation, and devil's in the details, are they commonly owned? And I'd have to argue they are. And so as a result, I would think that, you can use that language trying to against us in court, but you're going to lose because, I mean, how many millions of quote-unquote so-called assault weapons are out there? And the bottom line is they are commonly owned. So, and since they function the same way other firearms function, you know, one round at the pull of each trigger, the bottom line is that I don't see much of a chance. I don't think we'd lose that case. I think we'd be okay.
And considering that the AR-15 and AR-15 platform guns are at this point in time the best-selling rifle in America, it's hard to call that unusual, isn't it?
Well, right. However, if you're, a very left-wing liberal judge on the court, you probably call any gun unusual. So this is going to be, again, an area of contention and a whole lot of litigation.
So, Alan, you know, what kind of advice can you give to there's a huge body of gun rights activists out there. There's a lot of us out there who have been doing this a long time. What would you say our marching orders are this morning?
Join, get involved, and the fight starts now. So keep your powder dry and don't think we won the battle because it's first starting now and we need all the help we can get from everybody. We need a citizens' militia to stand up right now to defend that Supreme Court decision. Because quite frankly, I'll be honest with you, if Obama gets elected president and changes a few judges, they can wipe that away with the stroke of a pen.
That is a terrifying thought. That's a very terrifying thought.
It's a very terrifying thought. So the battle has really first begun now, and now if you've never been involved before, now's the time to get involved. If you've been involved, double your efforts.
So basically we can say to guns rights activists, go ahead and take the weekend off, but next Monday the war starts again.
Don't take the weekend off. Pop the cork on your champagne or pop the top on your can of beer. Enjoy it. The Monday morning, so to speak, be ready to get back out there on the front lines.
Alan, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck on the Chicago and the San Francisco suits.
Thank you very much, Michael. Great to be with you talking. This is just great. Thanks for all your help and support.
Thank you. Wow, I think we're starting to hear a refrain here, right? In addition to the 2008 elections, in addition to the November elections, the refrain is that this is a beginning, not an ending. This is a beginning, not an ending. We don't all get to retire. Darn. Darn, I was kind of looking forward to that. Palm trees, hammocks, all those kind of things. No, what we have to do is move forward to nail down the success that we've had yesterday. We need to nail this down. And this is something quite literally that the firearms industry, our culture, the gun culture, has not been very good at in the past. We've made successes, but we tend to rest on our laurels just a little bit too much, and what happens is those successes get nibbled away by ducks. Our enemies don't sleep. Our enemies do not sleep. As Alan noted right now, as we speak right now, in Brady in Washington, I would say in the Violence Policy Center, but they finished last year $43,000 in debt. So let's hope the Violence Policy Center goes bankrupt, but certainly at Brady, where they'll go on, after total thermonuclear war, the only three things left on the planet will be cockroaches, Keith Richards, and the Brady Organization. They will never go away, even though every year they become less and less influential. But right now at Brady, their strategists are frantically trying to figure out what to do, how they can attack our gun rights and stay within yesterday's Heller decision. So that means we need to be triply vigilant. That means we need to be watching very closely on a local level, on a regional level, on a state level of what's happening, and we need to move forward. If there are, for example, in your municipality, in your area, there are laws that, such as that soft prohibition we talked about, safe storage laws that in effect are designed to rob you of your ancient right of self-defense. I love that. That was Justice Antonin Scalia's wording. The ancient right of self-defense, a right that is not granted to you by the state, but a right that the state acknowledge exists. If there are safe storage laws that rob you of that right, then maybe it's time for you to start rounding up people to get in touch with the Second Amendment Foundation, to get in touch with the National Rifle Association, and make sure that that's on the agenda for the next round of lawsuits. Again, something as we talked about a little bit earlier with Larry Keene, I love this. I love this. In those dark days of the Clinton administration, I was working with the National Shooting Sports Foundation on the media education project. We were sometimes it felt like we were, rowing upstream against a vicious current. But working there at NSSF, every week a new city would announce that they were suing the gun industry. They were going to sue us into the Twilight Zone. I was in Washington, D.C., and I ran into one of Brady Spinner's, one of Brady's media people. And he said, man, I sure wouldn't want to be in your shoes now. You know, all these lawsuits, one right after another, because it's like being in an artillery shelling, isn't it? Said, yeah, it is a little bit like being in an artillery shelling. And he's no longer with Brady because he decided to work for a real company, a real nonprofit. But I would like to say the same thing to them. It's over the next year, over the next couple of years, we're very hopeful that the anti-gun forces, what's left of the anti-gun forces in the United States, are going to feel like they're under an artillery shelling. Because we are going to use the courts and we are going to reclaim the ground we lost. We're going to reclaim the ground that we've lost. We are going to build a rock-solid edifice to protect the Second Amendment in the United States, because darn 5-4 is too close. Again, as we mentioned on the 2008 elections, the president, whoever is in office, is going to get to choose a lot of federal judges at kind of a middle level. And good heavens, we need those to be rock-solid Second Amendment people. So another reason to get out to the polls. So the war never ends. The war never ends. And you know, it's truth. It's truthful. The war against freedom does never end, because there are a lot of people who want to see the United States with its teeth pulled. You look at Europe, you look at, the first world in Europe, you look at the third world around us, and we have a lot of enemies out there, and they're jealous of the lifestyle that we have here in the United States. And a lot of them are jealous of our right to keep and bear arms, because they understand what that means. They understand. People in the third world profoundly understand what the right to keep and bear arms means, because they don't have it. They don't have it, and they are subject to whatever nickel and dime dictator takes over their country. You certainly see that in Africa. You've seen it in South and Central America. You've seen it around the world. So a great victory yesterday, but just the beginning, and we need to begin to build on that victory. We'll be back later this afternoon with more commentaries that cover D.C. v. Heller, the affirmation of the Second Amendment as an individual right. I'm your host, Michael Bain. You are on Downrange Radio. Be sure to visit Downrange Television, www.downrange.tv. We have URLs. We have a couple of very sophisticated news feeds going on. So anything you want to know about what people are saying out there about yesterday's Supreme Court decision, go to Downrange Television and we'll hook you up. Thanks for joining us.